other through the N7 and the other across the mountains, and you have to take the way across the mountains. It's as if every possible stumbling block of getting people who don't have a formal education, assisting them to acquire one, every possible stumbling block is laid in your way, which made me wonder if the model of a college is actually the correct one. I mean, I can't really... The idea is it's a college with classrooms and workshops and whatever, but the main office of the college, let's say the administrative building, is in one place, and then the classrooms are dispersed all over the province. So the model of a school or of a college is actually... It can't be that way, and it also must make it difficult to have a proper oversight from the department side, forget about Parliament, from your side, over these different places of learning. And maybe I must say your presentation was very complete. I have many questions, and as you proceeded, okay, this one is ticked. I've got a clear picture of what is going on. But I wondered if a possibility isn't to see what is currently the college, the 9 colleges in each province, as a kind of an accreditation center, and then having churches or other NGOs or whatever apply to be a provider of some learning and teaching in the community, so that the initiative doesn't come from the department but from the community, which might be NGO and public, private sector kind of initiatives, where these centers are remunerated for their services once they have acquired success. Because I can think of many churches in suburbs having excess space which they could use, and maybe they might be retired people with specific skills, and it's not for the department to find the person with the right skills, but the person with certain skills maybe would say through this faith-based organization or whatever, I would like to teach people this or that. Whether it's a skill or a matric or whatever. I also had the question, which member Mkwacha quite answered, of do you have disciplinary kind of problems like schools, or are there adults who nobody needs to be there, so they are by nature cooperating? It also brings me to the whole idea of a student representative council. It's actually for me an impossible thing to conceptualize. Like, how do you elect a SRC from scores of different places, and these students don't know each other. They just know the people with whom they are in a specific place of learning. So those are all the reasons why I get back to what was actually my second point. Are we busy with a correct model, and would it be possible to get the initiative from the ground up rather than the other way around? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me firstly welcome the presentation. However, in some of the parts that deals with the institutional identity have been covered by Mr. Poshoff with regards to SRC. I think it's now that I'm here that I hear that this SRC in CET. However, we've been taking CETs as some of the, this thing of responding to HDI, but not believing that it's the core of education. So mine is to check if you have a plan or mechanism to deal with the issue of infrastructure, as you have alluded on your presentation that it's a big challenge. So do you have a plan One of the things that I've noted, ma'am, is that when you were presenting to us, you made a practical example with regards to chairs that are there, tables that cannot accommodate those who are direct beneficiaries in this particular space. To say, is there any plan to ensure that perhaps as a department you are able to get funding and buy those materials that you seem fit to actually assist these learners who are beneficiaries of the CET? The other thing is with regards to the issue of lectures. I just want to check if there, beside them, you know, being updated about the curriculum, don't you have your own learning and training capacity building programs? So that it's not that you have Teboho there as an old teacher dealing with a new system without having innovation. So I want to check, without like taking these people to other courses, don't you have your capacity building programs inside? And the other thing is with regards to issues of gender-based violence. You know, most of these particular learning and training and teaching happens at night, if it's the CET that I know, happens at night. So haven't you got any cases or reports that speaks to gender-based violence? And if so, what is it that the department could have done to deal with those issues and to put them in public, that people must know about them? Lastly, it's with regards to issue of backlog. I want to check in terms of the plan thereof in responding to that, specifically from your department, because last time we had CETA giving us the report with regards to zero backlog D-Day. So with yourself, Sanjay, if you have a plan that says that at least by this time we could have responded to those who are not certified. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jefferson. Thanks for the presentation. I am lost. What are we going to achieve? How? They are talking about limited budget, limited staff, limited. But where are we going to? It can't work like this. It can't. I think the minister is supposed to be here. It's just an embarrassment of this thing of Amasi. It is. They are struggling. They are struggling to do everything. I'm lost. They are talking about, I don't know if we are talking about lecturers. Are there any lecturers are being taken to that to be trained or to get more skills? How? If there is no fun. Minister. As was Kazela, would Queen can look at the candy. If our servants be frustrated because of funds, ministers on Kazela, and then I call it a near color now.
Oh, yeah, thanks, self appointed chair. Thank you so much. Good morning to everybody. I just wanted to ask on specific questions. I just have maybe it's just my own outlook, but I just have I might just be similar to the previous speaker about understanding these CETs. I visited a site in Kamalake in KZN. In South Coast, about these CETs, but I just wanted to ask much more policy related questions before I go to the practical details. One, I just wanted to check the qualifications, like you've mentioned, there are qualifications that, you know, people acquire based on community needs, but there are also qualifications that one might want to acquire and utilize for further studies or some form of skills development. And I wanted to check in terms of the quality of the qualifications and the curriculum offered in these CETs. One, are the quality assured by who? Those particular courses that are being offered, who exactly accredits them? And is there a particular backlog when it comes to accreditation? That's the first thing. And then secondly, I think the question on certification has been basically posed on what the plan is. So I'll leave that particular question. Thirdly, in 2018, there was an indication that 92% of the CET budget goes to compensation of employees. What is the figure looking like right now? Because most of the discussion is to say, you know, we're short here, we don't have enough funding for this, we don't have space for that. And if it goes to, you know, remuneration or compensation of employees, the 92% of the budget, you know, is it a sustainable financial model to use? Does it meet the objectives or the outcomes to make sure that there's some form of skills development or skills transfer in those people that are attending those particular spaces? And what is the figure looking at now in terms of compensation vis-a-vis finances used for the development of the relevant students? And then I just maybe would like to make a comment generally that, before I make that comment, the relationship that you have with the TVET colleges, because for me, anything that we develop that has to do with education, skills development, skills transfer, must be based on three things. One, there's a particular problem that we're trying to solve. So, and in us being trying to solve a particular problem, that will obviously lead to us developing a particular skill in individuals to solve those problems, and ultimately breed a culture of innovation, entrepreneurship, and all these other things. The relationship that you have with the TVET space, you know, does it talk to those three things, and how does it do so? Is there any particular relationship that you have, for example, with universities? The point I'm trying to, or the questions I'm asking are trying to get to a point whereby, is it necessary for us to have all these layers of different types of post-school education so separated, you know, with not a specific alignment and a specific linkage of the skills we're trying to develop, the problems we're trying to solve, and ultimately, you know, leading to innovation and entrepreneurship? Because there seems to me to be a gap, you know, between all of this stuff. Yes, this side, people will cry about funding, you know, and, you know, we don't have enough space for administration, we don't have enough space for lecture, but ultimately, are we working towards the same objective? Is there a linkage? Is there some form of collaboration in terms of us trying to achieve what we require? Because I think everything that we do is all about skills development and resolving our problems. So I think that's where maybe the biggest question for me is when it comes to CETs and generally just the post-school sector itself. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. I did not appoint myself, Honorable Nodat. The wee baiting chair today had said I must just deal with that process while she was out. thank you very much, everyone. Good morning as well. Maybe I must start on a lighter note. That Honorable Mananiso, every time she makes a joke, an example that is not good looking, she mentions my name. We are noting that part. but on a serious note, um, Well, maybe I'll finish with the comments. I must just go straight into questions, which are quite many here. Of course, others have been covered. I will just jump them as I get to them. The first one, maybe let me start with a comment because this one will be important. The perpetual apologies from the senior personnel at the department creates a serious problems for us. Because I think this first question that I'm going to pose would have been very important to them to answer. The DG, the minister, possibly the deputy minister. Dr. Mahlobo, I understand that you have been the acting DDG of CET since 2015. And I think maybe that is where our problems of CET start, because if we don't have a stable structure from the department side, how do we then expect the whole CET's colleges, 9 colleges in the country, and all other smaller branches there to be fully functional when the head, the person who's supposed to head this, is acting? I know it might be unfair to yourselves to answer because the DG is not here, but because the DG, Dr. Mahlobo, are acting today, I think, on behalf of the DG and the DDG, maybe you can answer the acting DG on why we have an acting DDG, which is yourself, for so long. It's been 5 years. I think that is where, in my personal view, that is where our problem starts, because there's no permanent structure there. So maybe if you can answer, we'll have a better answer. Information reaching us is that in KwaZulu-Natal, for an example, your lecturers at CETs, majority of them, are working as basic education teachers during the day and as lecturers in the afternoon. And I think in the previous, in the 5th Parliament, the answer you gave was, you don't want to upset the system by removing them. What are we doing there? I know that there's a high level of unemployment, at least in this country. There are people who qualify with degrees and diplomas who are unemployed. And we have people who are employed twice. And before we fix these things, we want to say we don't want to upset the system. What system? In my view, in fact, here we don't even have a system, to be honest. I have a problem, Honorable Chair, with how some departments under this government wants to run things. They are running them total contradiction of what the leading party of this particular government says. So they say something, they indicate left, that in the departments were acting right. So I do have a serious problem, because I don't understand why would have people teaching during the day as at basic education and becoming lecturers at night, whereas we've got people who we can just upskill and make them lecturers, deal with a specialization of them, but also deal with the issue of unemployment. I really don't understand. Maybe if you can assist us. I heard the presentation. You said the department deals with the employment of staff and management and all of those. So it's not CET by CET that deals with those things. It's the department. Can you then assist us with an answer that will tell us why are conditions of services different between colleges? By this I mean those who work in these institutions, why are they paid differently? Those in one province different from the other province in terms of the payment structures, working hours, and so forth and so on. And what are you doing to have a standardized conditions of service for these employees? The National Development Plan, as it was announced in 2012, gave CETs a target of 1 million by 2030. How far are we in reaching this target for CETs? What are the challenges that we have experienced so far? So if we, I'm sure NDP gave you year by year targets, how far are we in 2020 in terms of those mini targets in reaching 2030? And in 2020, have you reached your targets of barracking? Your enrollment targets for 2020. If not, why not? And what was the target for 2020 specifically? And how far? Well, of course, I understand you might not have those answers, those numbers now. What was the target for 2020? And if you have reached those, if you have not, what are the challenges? And by how much have you missed? Such. On policy, have you developed one, and has it been approved by yourselves, department? Again, if not, why not? And when do you envisage reaching that target of developing policy for this CETs. One thing that came out clear was that 2.5 billion funding is not enough, and I agree it's not. I know I'm not in your shoes, but from what I think, from a layman's point of view, I also agree that it's not enough. But from the budget, the 2.5 that was given to you, maybe in the past two financial years, has the program utilized all its funding provided, or you have failed to utilize some. I was trying to check my from last year, the Auditor General's report on targets, it did not come out clear, and that's why I'm asking it. Have you utilized all the funds provided to you, these ones that we all agree that they are not sufficient? Have you utilized all of them? And if you have returned some, why? And how much was it? How much money did you use? And what are we doing about? Because if there's money that we returned back from the small amount of money that we agreed that it's small, and we fail to spend all of it, it means amongst ourselves we have capacity problems. And what are we doing about that? What plans, what actions have we taken to make sure that those are addressed? I was reading somewhere that it says you have appointed unqualified, underqualified, and inappropriately qualified lecturers, generally in CETs. So I might have a diploma in hospitality, and I might have been appointed to teach maths, for an example. So I'm inappropriately qualified. There are those who are appointed because they are underqualified. So maybe the advert said to have a diploma, but I have a matric, and I went to University of Technology and did not complete a diploma, but I'm employed today. And there are those who are unqualified as well. My question with regards to that is, have we done that audit of who is employed at these CETs, what kind of qualifications they have versus what they are teaching there, and who appointed these people? Have we taken any actions with regards to dealing with those who did these improper things? Because my understanding is that these people are paid by public funds. And if we are to be fair, you know, there's something that needs to be done, because it will be that thing of jobs for pals and so forth and so on. On infrastructure, I think I heard that you spoke about the infrastructure that we are using being primary schools in majority and not having enough high schools. I mean, really, if I were to go to primary school, I'm sure I would not even be able to sit down, because cover would mail, but and so I can imagine those who comes once and not come back. It's not that Bangal or they don't want education, but the conditions are not conducive really for them to learn. I'm sure they would look like they're in a mental institution if somebody were to come in and take a photo of all of them sitting on those chairs. And if they don't sit on those chairs, they will sit on top of those desks, and they will not be able to write properly because the books will be on their laps. So the department has not put in enough effort, in my view, as far as that is concerned, in making sure that at least the situation is conducive enough for learning and teaching. Maybe for teaching it might be, but for learning it might be a problem. So generally in the country we've got buildings owned by public works which are not utilized. There are too many. There are too many. I mean, because I'm from Gauteng, you can tell me which area and I'll tell you which building belongs, and it's not even my line of work. But if we were to do, the department was to do due diligence on this thing, we have went to provincial governments, of course, together, we are from national government. We say, you've got this building, you say your offices are in Omonde, your CET in Gauteng is in Omonde. I'm sure you are leasing out there with very serious money given to private people. But in Omonde, or not so far from Omonde, the Kodipereng, what is that place? Not far from Omonde. There are government buildings, including in Southgate, not far from there. It's and if you're Teflop, yeah, Tefonde, there are government buildings there. In Southgate, there are government buildings. And that is if you want to be in that area. But if you are in that area, it means you are in the south. So you are further away from the people who come from the north, and mostly people from the east. So if the department was to put an effort, go to Maribitang Infrastructure Development, DID, in Gauteng, you'd find that, including in town, there are buildings that are not utilized, that belongs to the states, that sit there and nothing happens. So if you are to lease there as the department, you'll save enough money from these ones that you are leasing from private companies. They will give, you'll get you a serious block of flats there to be your thing. You can even have classes there at very cheap, I'm sure, because it will be government to government. You can even lease for 2 rand per month and save money that should go into the other programs of the department. So I would like to challenge, I'm sure even in other provinces that might be the case. But look, speak to provincial governments, let them assist you with buildings that they have that they are not using, including the national government, public works. They do have a lot of buildings that they are not using in the country. Majority of them are in the CBDs. You see, if you are in town in the CBD, everybody takes one, takes your soul to there. But if you are in a suburb somewhere, it means those with no mode of transport must use more than one mode. So you're becoming, your accessibility becomes limited to some and easy for some. So maybe let's do that exercise. I think Honorable note that on the access versus the success issue covered me on the qualification, accreditation, and quality assurance by the relevant authorities. And I wanted to ask who, if you are not, if all your qualifications are not accredited and quality assured, why not, and when can this be achieved? Because if we're not going to concentrate on that, tomorrow somebody will come and say, maybe let me make an example with Honorable Boshoff. Will come and say, Honorable Boshoff achieved or got his qualification from Ntlanzeni CET, from example, and it was not accredited, therefore it's fake. So if he has a doctorate now, I know it's not in the scope here, but people might say, he faked that part. And how far are we with getting these things done? You are saying your highest NQF level is matric, NQF level 4. Do we have, so with NQF level 4, so it then means those who have NQF level 4, they can, depending on the point scoring that they manage to get, they can get into TVET or university level. But what is your lowest NQF level that you are offering at institutions or that institution? And certifications, I think Honorable Malani Soento covered me on the backlog. This issue of certification for us is extremely important because we're dealing with one now of TVET colleges, the backlog there, where people involved don't even know what is the backlog, what is the exact number of backlog, which is a serious problem. And we don't want to have the same problem this side. What are the challenges in certificating those who graduate from you? And what is the process? Who are the involved parties? With TVETs, it's CETA, it's the department, and TVET colleges. With yourself, who is involved? And what is the path? It moves from who to where? And how long does it take? What is the turnaround time? So that we also don't create a problem for those who, for one reason or the other, leaves secondary schooling for one reason or the other, and when they want to get their certificate, they are discouraged by those who went before them, who say, no, but Mole Khwatswana, you will not get certificated. So it's just a leisure, Mole Fela Borefi. That is important, at least for some of us who grew up in the township. We know a perception becomes reality if it's not tested, if it's not proven otherwise. We know these people. I mean, Abed became a failure of some sort because people said there's nothing that we're taught there and all of those things. So people did not want to go there. And we don't want to be part of a process that also kills the CET from the beginning. So perception, at least in the township, if you are too dark, Honorable Mukachwa, they will say you are a witch. You are a witch and you will be banned. They don't need proof. So perceptions in the townships, they go. I mean, we're from there. So how do we, what is the certification system that we're having there? Maybe the last one, occupational skills. I heard that you said you are giving almost 4 programs there, your basic ones, your until matric, but you also spoke about occupational skills. The department, we have CETAs, we have CETAs that deal with these things. I know some that deals directly with occupational skills development. Just running away from me, but construction sector, for an example, deals directly with these things of plumbing and all of those things. Rona, here, when we're saying we're giving them occupational skills, what are we doing? And aren't we as a department creating a repetition of programs with different branches of the department? And these occupational skills that you're saying you're giving, are they accredited by the relevant people, your QCTOs and so forth and so on? Are they accredited because we don't want to see somebody's an artisan, and when they apply in my company and I decide to do a check on them and they are not registered anyway, it means they will say again we're giving out fake accreditation. The infrastructure part I covered. So the most the comment, Chair, that I said I would make at the end is that I think generally in the department we must agree that we have a problem. Because we've had Dr. Mahlobo, you know, it might not even be his fault, but because he's acting DG today, he would have to answer this one. But we've had the head of a branch in acting position for so long. And when we requested to meet with the CETs, we said we want to get a clearer picture of governance and management of CETs. We might have done that intentionally to send a message to yourselves, acting DG, that will not have a proper management in this institution. I'm sure if you can give us a presentation of this CET, or maybe first colleges, these nine colleges, provincial colleges, these are the positions that have been filled, these are the ones who are vacant in management, we'll get a shocking picture. Two, on councils, these are the councils that have been appointed, there are no resignations on this one, there are so many resignations, we'll also get a bad picture. So what I'm trying to say is that as much as these things are directed at yourselves here, they are directed at the department, but because you are the department here today, you'll have to take it. If at the head, at the top of the echelon, we don't have a structure, a right structure, it will be very difficult to get these things right going down. Because if the leadership at the top have serious problems, is acting this and that, I'm not sure after you who comes, but I'm sure, you know, I can bet with my 10 runs now that it's probably acting as well. So if you have actings, how do you expect, because if you are acting, or maybe you, but those who are under you, who these institutions must report to them, this week is this one, next week is that one, there's no proper accountability and monitoring and evaluation of progress there. So the message, I want to propose, Chair, for you to take there is that there's a serious concern about the structure itself in the branch of CETs in the department. Of course, those who deal with these things, if you are saying the financing part of the 2.5 were in the department, it's only this financial year that the institutions can now procure services themselves. This is what I heard. So it means in the department, it might have been dealt with a different department, maybe that deals with the SCM or finance and all of those. So all of these things will bring them to you, but we know that you might not have had, it might not have been yourselves dealing with them directly, but we are raising them with you because it's your responsibility also to take them to the department. Currently, I would be very interested at the end of this financial year to check how much was sent to the CETs and how much was utilized correctly. Of course, the Auditor General will assist us. So the questions that I asked about 2.5 billion, I just want to make you aware that I was asking it intentionally. Some of the answers I have, but I had to ask it because I want to also get how the departments will answer to some of these things. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Letsie. I think our guests from the department will have noted the interest from members on this issue. If they were not interested, they would not have said anything. Even when they spent 30 minutes on an issue, it just shows their interest in ensuring that state funds are not wasted on programs that we don't understand are meant to achieve what. So I'll allow you, Acting DDG, to lead your delegation in responding to the comments and questions from members.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks, Honourable Members, for the questions. Chair, with your permission, I'll ask my colleagues to take some of the questions, and I'll come back later, Mr. Dearen.
Thank you, Chair, and Honourable Members. Perhaps just as a response to the broad question or issues you've raised, Chair, which are issues more around the mandate and vision of CET. One of the issues I think that we must bear in mind is that we're talking of a program that talks to second and third chances. And therefore, if you think about the implications of such a system, it means that your programs are necessarily going to be diverse. So, Chair, at the moment, when you have not completed your schooling as a 16-year-old, you are unable to go back to school. When you are 16 or 17 year old, you drop out of grade 9, you can't go back to school. And therefore, what then do you do with these youngsters? So one of the responses is then to say, channel these youngsters to CET, particularly with those that have not really completed schooling, because those that have completed schooling are able to go further to university to TVET. But if you have not completed schooling in this country, there is no other option other than going to CET. So I think one must appreciate that you require some level of basic skills and basic education for you to then access the rest of the PSET system. There are indeed challenges, as you are raising them, around how capacitated our lecturers then to deal with this diversity of needs from the various students. So I just wanted to just broadly at least appreciate that in this country, this is the only second chance system that's in place. I think the other issue that you have raised is around the issue of how do you get to accept students into CET. Now, in terms of policy, we have what we call placement assessments. So if you don't have an evidence of previous education, a report or a previous certificate, normally there's a placement assessment. So the issue really we are raising is that in that particular center, the lecturers are therefore not using a placement assessment to be able to then say you place a student whether at TVET level 3 or 4 and so on. So we've just noted that we must then strengthen this aspect of ensuring that the placement assessment is actually implemented.
I think the difference between CET and TVET is primarily around the target audience, because your TVET colleges do not accept students who do not have any basic education or qualification. So for you to enter a TVET, you must have fulfilled particular entrance requirements. Now, a majority of some of our students do not have such qualifications to be able to enter into a TVET college. And therefore, a sizable number of those who drop out or do not finish schooling clearly cannot access TVET colleges. So that's where there are need for upgrading their basic education to enable them then to get into the other PSET institutions. So I'm just saying the target audience is really around out-of-school youth who do not fulfill the entry requirements, either for university or TVET colleges, and I'm saying it's a sizable number. The second chance system does require some form of social compact, because it does require lots of partnerships and linkages and networks. The department cannot go on it alone. So I think that's noted, Chair. I think the other issues that we have raised, Chair, are more around further work that we must do. For example, this issue of the institutional culture. To what extent is it a welcoming environment? To what extent are the lecturers and management themselves therefore receptive to engaging appropriately with our students? So I think that this is noted. If you compare the institutional model that we've put in place with other models internationally and in Africa, these are similar models around how you deal with out-of-school youth in particular, or adults who did not complete their education. So the model necessarily is much more complex, because it does require you to have linkages with other partners for delivery purposes. From Honorable Boshoff, I think some of the issues I've just noted them, because they may not require a response. It's just how we then deal with going forward, how we deal with some of the mitigation strategies. Disciplinary processes, Chair, all of the colleges have processes in place for dealing with issues of discipline as part of the college processes. The issues around lecturers, colleagues, in the department, we have a directorate that deals with lecturer development, which is supposed to provide oversight around what needs to be done in relation to lecturer development, in relation to support, in relation to issues of upgrading, in relation to issues of new curricula, and so on. So the directorate plays that coordination role. But you are linking up with a variety of universities to then provide capacity building programs. So currently, for example, Durban University of Technology is upgrading our lecturers basically in terms of new lecturer qualifications. So that's the linkage there. In some instances, we have partnerships around issues of specialization. So some of the lecturers, in terms of their qualification, you need to strengthen their specialization. In some instances, you need to strengthen their teaching methodology and assessment. So we then have relationships with universities on the basis of the particular lecturer need. Located colleagues within our national CET sector plan, we have a 5-year lecturer development plan located within the national CET sector plan. So that's the plan that in a sense, is responding to some of the issues that we've tabled here. I think, members, in relation to the certification backlog, I think you have engaged last week with our National Assessment and Examinations Directorate. That is the same directorate that is responsible for our CET qualifications. I'll talk later to the actual process, but the directorate, National Exams and Assessment, when you are visiting CETA, with you are actually going with the colleagues. They are responsible at national level also for the GETC qualification. I think the other issues about, let me talk to the curriculum issues and the qualifications. Currently, CET, we provide two qualifications. The first one at NQF level one, which is the General Education and Training Certificate for ABET. So it's at NQF level one. That qualification is quality assured by UMALUS. So your certification are certifications that are provided via UMALUS. So UMALUS equality assures all of the processes regarding examinations. So from question papers, moderation, marking and all of that, they play a role around quality assurance. At NQF level 4, the qualification is the senior certificate. Now, the senior certificate is a matric equivalent qualification. The current arrangement is that that qualification is a qualification located in the Department of Basic Education, and therefore it's run by the Department of Basic Education, with us as colleges registering students to sit for that particular qualification. So in terms of that qualification, again, it's a qualification also quality assured by UMALUS. Yeah. Please also note, at the period of transition in 2015, one of the agreements that was made with provincial education departments was that the function of examination in 2015 was not transferred to the Department of Higher Education and Training in relation to capacity issues in DHET. So at the moment, the provincial education departments are still running the GETC exams on behalf of the department. So there's a protocol agreement between the department and provincial education departments around the running of the examinations. Chair, I think last week the colleagues Nia, Yosita and Uma Lucy did indicate yourselves the issue around the zero date for certification. So that is the responsible section. Chair, I may be out of 10 here, but I think the question around the stability of the CET branch, Chair, with due respect, may be better placed with the Minister and the DG. So that I would request that, because I'm not sure that Dr. Makhabo is the acting DG now. but I'm just saying it's just a request that particular issue is tabled with the political and administrative heads. With regards to lecturers, colleagues, the KZN issue, indeed, we would want to deal with this aspect of, we call it double dipping. You are dipping from basic education, also dipping from higher education. Now, what's going to solve this question is that at the moment, we are busy with two processes. The one is a standardization of conditions of service. That standardization of conditions of service will then assist us to then say, you want your lecturers to be actually dedicated to CET, so that's the first process. The second process, as we implement there are new lecturer qualifications that we will be putting in place, which would make it not possible for you to be teaching in CET without a CET related qualification. We've inherited that arrangement in 2015, colleagues. And in that transition, of course, it's taking a bit long for us to then deal with the issue of dealing with the double dippers. But I think the message is loud and clear from yourselves to say we must just perhaps accelerate this issue around the KZN issue. Maybe lastly from me, Chair, the appointment of lecturers. There are employment requirements in the department around who gets employed. However, we must distinguish between what we've inherited. So the issue about inappropriate qualifications and other qualifications are more inheritance from PEDs. So with regards to new lecturers that have been appointed or replacing those that go out of the system, the requirements are clear. You must have a matric plus 3 years, you must be qualified for you to be appointed. Where you are appointed, you will not be able to be put on the system. So PESAL will kick out a new educator or lecturer who gets to be employed in the system. So in other words, what that happens is that the person is not appointed, that particular process goes back to the college, because that's the issue. So the issues around inappropriate qualification, under qualification, it's more around existing employed lecturers that we need to deal with. So at the moment, we're working on the lecturer development policy around upgrading for the lecturers. And then lastly from my side is just to say the occupational skills programs, these would be quality assured by the Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, or the QCTO. At the moment, I think members are aware that there's a transition between CETA quality assurance processes, which function is going back to the QCTO. So when we engage with QCTOs, it's because they have been quality assuring what we call legacy qualifications. So there's a process of renewing qualifications via the QCTO. What that means is that we as CET College, similar to TVETs, would want to be accredited for the provision of occupational qualifications and skills programs. Specifically with us, the target is more around skills programs, much more shorter programs that we are then, we have a partnership with the QCTO around that particular aspect. So all of the skills programs that we will then provide would then be quality assured by the QCTO. I think, Chair, those are just the few points I needed to respond. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Honourable Members, for the questions. And I think for me, just also, you know, when it's encouraging that, you know, some of the questions or the comments coming from the members and really support your statement, Chair, to say that the committee has got interest in the sector. And when you mentioned that you actually visited one of our centers, you know, that, because now that says really it's factual, the issues on the ground and so on. And I think for us that is really a very good, it's a tell to say there's interest, you know, in what you're doing, and you're making effort into understanding it. In terms of the policies, to say whether as a sector do we have policies that we have developed, yes, we do. We have the National Policy for Community Colleges. We have the Service Delivery Model
service delivery framework that we have done for the sector. We have the framework for the SRCs that I spoke about earlier on. We also have, you know, curriculum policy. But of importance, we have the CET National Plan for implementation of the white paper. And that is, for us, is our roadmap between now and 2030. Because in it, you'll also find our roadmap towards achieving the 1 million that has been set by the NDP. And as of this year, what we have done as a program, as a branch, is that we have given the colleges the enrollment targets, you know, to guide them in terms of how, per college, how we can actually work towards achieving the 1 million. And we've also even taken them down to make them program-based, so that it is not just a concentration of enrollment, how people are not then responding to what we want them to actually achieve. So there is that we have in place. And I will link that to the question you asked around the enrollment. And as at the end of January, when we collected after the colleges have opened, which was in 2 weeks' time, we had an enrollment of 122,830 in the system. And enrollment was still continuing, so we'll be collecting again at the end of February to see how far, you know, how far it has gone. But that was as at the end of January in terms of enrollment across the CET colleges. Now, for I'll also talk about the issue of the SRCs to say how practical is it. You know, we I think for us, if we could have delayed not having SRCs in the sector, probably we could have done that. But it's actually a requirement in terms of the law, you know, that established the colleges to say they must have SRCs, and we had to make it work, despite the challenges that we knew actually exist. And why we put the framework in place, we actually wanted to guide that, you know, appreciating that the CET is really a multi-layered institutional type of a thing, and far apart from each other, students not knowing each other. But when you look at the framework, you'll realize that we are actually guiding that elections must happen, you know, for instance, from the CLCs, and at the CLCs, they will nominate how many, how they proceed to your district level, and how ultimately you now have what is termed a college SRC. So the process is really outlined there, and we have put it in terms of assisting the colleges how they should. And just to make sure that things are actually very valid, I think in the past 2 years, which is 2017 and 18, the colleges, when they had their SRCs elections, we actually had an assistance of the IEC. You know, they came on board to assist in terms of the election and making sure that proper processes and the validity of the SRC that are there is actually not questioned. I'll touch a bit on infrastructure in terms of the efforts that we are making. You know, we really note the suggestions that are put to us that we must go and do. I just wanted to indicate that, you know, one of the things that we actually did was working with our councils, because we really involved them a lot, to say, can we just make sure that in your provinces, at least identify, say, the closed schools, for instance. That's what we did. And in Gauteng specifically, we did get a list of those schools, and we pursued the matter with the Gauteng Department of Education through the office of the HOD. And they did give us a number of schools which we made an effort to visit some of them. But when we got there, we found out the communities have occupied, you know, these schools. There are a number of churches that are there that are operating from the schools. There are community members who have occupied the schools. And you know the eviction processes, you know, in terms of how when you want to say to people leave, finding alternative and so on. So we really hit a wall in that sense, because there were these other issues not go beyond us. But also for us as a department, we have tried, you know, also that initiated some of the processes with the Department of Public Works and so on, because we have taken it upon ourselves to say we will identify this building. No one's going to do that for us. The government buildings that are underutilized will identify, you know, because we learned that in our space, in a way, we also need to be activists. So it's important that we identify this and come back to say formally what processes do we then put in place. So it's something that we take the comment and the advice, but something that also we are working on. We probably just need to put much more effort into it so that it comes to pass. But it's a note that we are taking in terms of infrastructure. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think my colleagues have taken most, if not all the questions. But what I just would like to emphasize the point made by Mr. Diari. Say I started acting in 2010 when the department split into basic education and higher education. I was the acting head of what was then called vocational and continuing education and training branch, which in 2015 we submitted a recommendation to split the two, because TVET colleges have a different mission and CET colleges have a different mission. And then the TVET college was then headed by the late Mr. Feroz Patel, and I acted as a DDG here in 2016. In other words, from TVET to CET to date. And for that, only the executive authority and the DG can explain. I can't explain that. No, members. At least we are able to talk about community education and training today. When this function came to us, it was a constitutional requirement in terms of Section 29. Now, however, we have to vary the content of the function because of the needs. And when I started, I said, when we wrote the policy on community college, the Stats SA figures were at 18 million people who can benefit from this program if the program is properly structured and is functioning effectively. And that is why our passion in the program, we believe it can be done. That is why we have to go creative sometimes. And as I said, in Kokstad, we are using a center which was built for the municipality, built by a services center. And we've moved our students from the school into that skill center. And Ikala in the Eastern Cape, we're doing the same. And therefore, gradually, the institutional form is going to emerge, but we acknowledge that it's not going to happen overnight due to limitations of different kind, which we have already spoken about. We have had, ever since we started this program, we have had no underspending ever since we started with the program. And we also have learned that you have to tailor your suit according to the cloth that you have, because beyond that, underspending is a crime in government, and overspending equally. You can't do that. You have to spend according to that. Unfortunately, also given the limited budget, we don't have tenders. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Acting DDG.
An Oscar nominee is something which has not come. I would have loved it.
Sorry, can you say
a nomination for an Oscar.
A nomination for an Oscar. Thank you very much, Acting Chair. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. What has come out from this conversation is that it's very important for us to find a way of ensuring that those that need a second chance or a third chance have an environment that is conducive to fulfilling that particular need of theirs. Therefore, we have to get the CET sector right. So its need in society is something that is a common view. However, how we go about it seems to be a challenge that is being faced, and it's a concern challenge within those that have been in conversation today at this portfolio committee meeting. What has come out from the meeting as well is that there's an important need for us to engage the political leadership of the department, because essentially the mandate of those who work in the department comes from those that influence the policies. So infrastructure, funding, all of those things can only be executed upon a political mandate. So it's important that they be here in conversations like this. So there's going to be a need for us to have a follow-up conversation with the political leadership of this department to fully understand what was being thought of when this program was conceptualized, and how we can strengthen this particular program. There's a need for us to revisit the funding mechanisms or systems of this program, to look into the budget of this program as well, as it seems not to be able to reach the demand that is needed for us to fulfill our targets of this program. There's a need for us to revisit the entire model of the program. SRCs have come out a lot in this conversation to say that their role is not fully understood in what we're trying to achieve, but that also speaks to the model of the sector and the way in which it has been structured, as the Honourable Boshoff referred to a lot. Infrastructure seems to be a great challenge as well in the sector, and it's something that we need to look into as to how we can broaden availability of infrastructure, space, how we actually envision these colleges to be set up also needs to be revisited. So when we do get the funds to build the many buildings, what is the thinking behind where we're going to locate what, you know? That also, so before we build, we must actually know why we're building where we are building and how we are building. So those conversations need to take place urgently. I think also there's an importance, what has come up is that there's importance also to synchronize the different education programs, not only in higher education, but also in basic education. So perhaps a conversation between basic and higher education on this particular issue would be important as well. A lot has come out in terms of the institutional culture and identity of this particular program. To say that it is important, which links again to the issue of the model of the program in its entirety. A lot of concern has come up with regards to a lack of stability in terms of the management of the department when it comes to those who have been in acting positions for a very long time, and we need to resolve on these issues. Perhaps members, we could look into requesting a day zero action plan to day zero to acting, like the day we will no longer have acting people in our departments because it's just unacceptable. And that has come out strongly from members. So I would have left a lot out. However, I mean, there are minutes, there is PMG here. So the sentiment is that we need to get it right. We need to get it right. And people are impatient. The country is impatient. Young people need to be skilled. Young and matured people need to be skilled. I won't call them old. They need to be skilled in order for us to ensure their economic participation in our economy, and that they're able to contribute to the development, the sustainable development of this country. So I thank you all for your active engagements today, and I'd like to end the meeting. Thank you.